Like HGTV told me they would. Great. I painted the kitchen walls. Also great. Then I started the bathroom shower tiles. As in, I removed about half of them and replaced maybe 6. I counted them. Okay, so 8. As convenient as it was to use the remodel as a way to discourage my dad's random drop-ins, I really needed to stop procrastinating. This house was my way to prove that I could take care of myself. I didn't know who I was trying to prove that to more, myself or my dad. And did it really matter? The water was finally warm enough to wash my hair. It only shorted out on me a couple of times. When I turned it off, the shower still dripped behind me as I rough-dried my hair. I thought of Elodie's friend again, the stranger in my house. He seemed nice enough, but so quiet. I wrapped a hand towel around the leaking bath faucet. I wondered if Philip was the kind of guy to mind his friend staying with his pregnant wife. I started to feel uneasy as I blow-dried the tips of my hair. It was impossible to blow-dry in less than 30 minutes, and I only had about 10 before I had to leave. That would have to do. I had to do laundry and soon. I didn't need to be super dressed up for my dad and his wife, but I knew my outfit would be the topic of conversation at the dinner table. Outside of each of our outfits and the typical, "Have you seen any movies lately?" question, my stepmom had nothing to talk to me about. To be fair, I had even less to say to her. I barely had any clothes left in my dresser, so I shoved my hand in the Forever 21 bag next to my nightstand. Would I be Forever 21? I guess I'd find out next month on my birthday. There wasn't much of use in the bag. A pair of jeans, one size too big, and a brown shirt that fit me but looked like it would make me itch. I could hear Elodie's voice as I got dressed. It sounded like she was trying to explain Scandal to her soldier friend, and it made me laugh because she was the absolute worst at explaining movies or shows to anyone. She always got everyone's names confused and would spoil the ending without even meaning to. As someone who hated spoilers, I now knew better than to ask her about anything she had already seen. I finally made it out to the living room with about 5 minutes to spare before I had to leave. Cale was sitting in the same spot, his eyes looking like they were going to close any minute, his t-shirt clinging to his broad shoulders. It was funny the way the chair looked so small when he was in it. Elodie popped out of the kitchen with a big bowl of popcorn.
"Leaving?"
she asked. I nodded, digging my hand into the bowl. I was starving. "I'm going to be late," I said, groaning.
"What would happen if you didn't go?"
Elodie and I joked about my Tuesday date often. Every single Tuesday, to be exact. They would disown me? I looked at Cale. He wasn't looking our way, but somehow I knew he was listening. He was a soldier, after all.
"So wouldn't be so bad, yeah?"
She wiped her buttery fingers across her shorts and then licked them. To be sure, I guess. "Not bad at all." "Hey." I pulled open the fridge door to grab a drink. Elodie went a little far on the salt in the popcorn. "Do you want me to bring you home dessert?" She nodded, smiling with a mouthful of popcorn. "I'll be back around 9. Maybe later, but hopefully not," I told both of my house guests. I found myself wondering what they would be doing after I left. The images in my head bothered me a little, but I wasn't sure why. Before I could even contemplate that, his voice surprised me just as I reached the front door. Chapter 15.
"Can I use your shower?"
His voice was soft as rain, and he looked at me patiently, as if expecting something. It was a look I would come to know well. Cale was familiar in the way that only a stranger could be. I hadn't seen him before today, but already I had memorized his face, the thick draw of his brow, the little scar above his eye. It was like I had come across him somewhere, or some time before. Maybe I had seen him in passing, at a store or on the street, online for a coffee or donut. Or maybe he just had one of those faces that felt familiar. There were people like that.
"Can I?"
he asked again. I fumbled a little. Yeah, of course. Of course you can shower. And maybe you want something to eat? There's not much in there, but make yourself at home. I could tell that Elodie was waiting for Kale to leave the room so she could start talking, but I didn't have time for even 5 minutes of adorable small talk. I knew my dad, and if I was just 5 minutes late, he'd spend twice that time lecturing me. I needed to leave.
Thanks, Kale muttered and stood up.
He looked so big next to my little leather couch. Actually, he looked so big next to everything in my house, even the china cabinet I bought off Craigslist before I realized how dangerous it was to meet strangers in the back of the Walmart parking lot. I had a lot of stuff in my house, most of it old and previously owned, and I had thought for a second, an insecure one, about this guy in my home. Did he notice the pile of dirty clothes desperately waiting to be washed, the stack of dirty dishes in the sink? And why did I care?
If there's that one pie, how do you say?
Elodie struggled for the English word.
The one with the little rouge?
She held up her fingers and I finished her thought for her. Cherries? Rouge was one of the very few words I remembered from high school French class. Elodie nodded, but she didn't have to. I knew she could eat an entire cherry pie in one sitting. I'd seen her do it. And who could blame her? My dad's wife, Estelle, was a decent cook. If I liked her more, I would admit that I actually loved her food. But I didn't, so I wouldn't.
Yes, yes, cherries.
Elodie licked her lips. I had to laugh because she was feeding into every stereotype of a pregnant woman I'd ever heard. I told her goodbye again, and Kale nodded at me, barely looking in my direction before heading down the hallway. I found myself waiting for the bathroom door to shut.
Is he always this quiet?
I asked Elodie. Then I shouted,
towels are in the closet behind the bathroom door,
loud enough that he would hear me. She shrugged.
I don't know.
She winced a little. I sighed. Yeah, don't remind me. She chewed on her lip the way she always did, and I gave her a somewhat reassuring smile. I left before another minute could pass. Chapter 16. I was late. Not a fender bender holding up traffic late, or my dad called last minute and asked me to grab some pop on my way late. This was big late. The kind of late that would end with my dad's dramatic sighs and a lecture about how Estelle had to keep the oven on to warm the food. But now the chicken was all dried up, and did I ever think of anyone but myself? I was supposed to be at my dad's house in 10 minutes, and I was still sitting in my driveway. As I said, late. I wasn't sure what I was doing, sitting in my car and staring out the windshield in silence. All I knew was that I hated Tuesdays and that I dreaded starting the car. I hated any and all obligations that I had no control over. I didn't like to be told what to do and where to be, and yet I let my dad put that burden on me. He'd applied that kind of pressure my whole life, and I did nothing to stop it. I checked my phone again, a missed call from a random number. When I tried to call it back, it said it was a collect call. Did those even exist anymore? I went on Instagram, for no reason really, and scrolled through pictures of girls I had known in high school and were now away in college or in the military themselves. Not a ton of people I went to high school with ended up going to college. For money or whatever reason, it just wasn't the norm like it was in movies. I stopped scrolling when I saw a picture of a coast, bright blue water and white sands. This was the backdrop to a couple of lounge chairs shaded by beach umbrellas, and in the corner of the photo, two hands clinking glasses of what I guessed were piña coladas. The caption read, OMG, if you think this view is nice, wait till we post pics tonight. The sky here is so beautiful, with a bunch of heart eye emojis. The girl whose account it was, Josie Spooner, was a complete social narcissist who posted every time she left the house. Her daily coffee cup with a quote about how she's ready to kick Monday's ass or, ugh, people suck, so bad, don't feel like talking about it, filled my feed often. I didn't know why I didn't just delete her. I hadn't spoken to her since we moved from North Carolina. Then again, if I deleted everyone who annoyed me on social media, I would have zero friends. I was mid-eye roll when I caught something out of the corner of my peripheral vision. It was Kale, dressed in his tan camouflage ACU uniform, striding down the grass and onto the sidewalk. I rolled my window down and called to him.
Hey, He walked toward my car, ducking a little so he could see me. Where are you going? I asked, before I realized how nosy that sounded.
On post.
That soft voice again. Right now? You're walking? Like it was any of my damn business. He shrugged his shoulders.
Yeah. My car's there.
He looked down at his uniform.
And my clothes?
But it's so far. He shrugged again. Was he really going to walk 3 miles? I looked at the little digital clock on my dash. 7 o'clock. I should be knocking on my dad's door right now. But here I was, sitting in my driveway, debating with myself whether or not to offer him a ride. We were both going to the same place, after all. Well, maybe we were. Fort Benning wasn't as big as, say, Fort Hood, but it was big enough. Kale stood up straight, his upper body disappearing from view as he walked away. I called out for him again, almost by instinct.
Do you want a ride? I'm going through the West Gate. Where's your company?
He leaned down again.
Near Patton. Same gate.
That's right by me. I mean, my dad's. Get in. I noticed the way he was fiddling with his fingers. It reminded me of how Austin used to get so antsy when we had to go to our mom's. He would sit in the back seat with me, picking at the skin around his nails until they bled. I repeated my offer. It was going to be the last one. Kale nodded. No words, just walked to the passenger door. Actually, he went for the back seat. This isn't an Uber, I told him, only half joking. He sat down next to me. This was different. Usually my only passenger was pint-sized Aility, but here was this big guy sitting next to me with his knees touching the dashboard, smelling like my coconut body wash. You can adjust the seat, I told him. I put the car in reverse and my gear shift stuck for a second. It had been doing that lately. My reliable 1990 Lumina had been my one constant since I bought it for $500, almost entirely in singles from tips I made at La Rosa's Pizza, where I had worked after school and on weekends. I was the only one of my friends to have a job in high school. My small group of friends would complain, trying to pull me away from work to go to parties, to the lake, to smoke weed in the parking lot of the elementary school we hung out at. Yes, elementary school. We were mildly delinquent, but at least I could pay for my own delinquency. Ugh, I groaned and jiggled the gear. Kale stayed silent in the seat next to me, but I swear I saw his hand lift from his lap, like he was going to reach over and help me if I didn't get it. But I did. My tires crunched down the gravel driveway and we were on our way. I didn't text my dad that I was going to be late. Why would I? When I knew he'd lecture me by text and then again in person, just so he could be sure I got the point. He was that kind of guy. Yay for Tuesdays. Chapter 17. The alleyway looked deserted. It was like everyone had cleared out in the last hour, which I supposed they had. Kale buckled his seatbelt across his chest. I ignored the little ding my car gave, the one that reminded me to put my seatbelt on, like I always did. Luckily, it was an old car, so it would only ding once, sometimes twice. I thought about starting a conversation, but from what little I knew about this guy, it wasn't really his thing. I glanced over at him and quickly turned on the radio. I had never been around anyone who made me feel this prickly awkwardness before. I couldn't explain what it was like, couldn't even be sure that I disliked it, but I just felt like I should talk. What was that? The urge to pierce the air, the need to fill the space with words. Maybe Kale had it right and the rest of us had it wrong. The radio was playing a song I hadn't heard before, but I recognized Shawn Mendes's voice. I turned the music up a little and we drove in silence until we got closer to the post. I hoped his company was as close as I thought it was. I tried not to come on post unless I had to, or to go to the doctor, which was often one and the same. My gas indicator light was on, a bright reminder of how irresponsible I was. When the Shawn Mendes song finished, it was time for a commercial break. I listened to the ads. A testimonial for a weight loss clinic, an offer for low-interest car loans, huge military discounts, the voice promised with a borderline shout. You can change the station if you want, I told him, ever the cordial host. What kind of music do you like?
This is fine.
Okay. I exited the highway and was glad to see there wasn't a line to enter the base. I loved living on my side of town, close enough to the post, but far enough from my dad that I could breathe. Here we are, I said, as if he couldn't see the bright lights ahead of us. He shifted his hips and pulled out a dog-eared wallet from the pocket of his ACU pants. He dropped his military ID into my open hand. The tips of his warm fingers grazed my skin and I jerked my hand away. His ID fell between the seats. Damn it! I shoved my fingers into the slim slot and managed to grab the card just as it was my turn to approach the guards.
Welcome to the Great Place,
the soldier working the gate said. Really? I couldn't help but tease him. Ever since the soldiers were required to recite that ridiculous motto, I gave them shit about it. I couldn't help it.
Yes, really,
he said, his tone neutral. He inspected our ID cards and the standard decal stuck to my windshield.
Have a good night,
the soldier told us, though I knew he didn't care about our night. He probably thought we were together, that I was some barracks whore driving up to this guy's small room where we'd have sex while his roommate slept in the other bed. I don't know where I'm going, I told Kale. He switched off the radio.
Turn right,
he mumbled, just as I was passing a street on the right. Right now? I jerked the wheel to make the turn in time. He nodded.
Next light. Turn left there. There.
As if it wasn't bad enough that I would get to my dad's late as hell and that the car was running on empty, I could feel my palms getting clammy on the steering wheel. Kale looked over just in time to see me wipe them on my jeans.
They're up here on the right. It's a big brown building,
he told me. The buildings were all nearly identical. The only thing differentiating one from the other was the number painted on the side. Yeah, they're all big brown buildings here at the Great Place. I swear I heard the tiniest hint of a laugh. Just a small puff of smoke, enough to show that he was at least mildly amused by my comment. Sure enough, when I looked over, there it was, a sliver of a smile spread across his lips.
Just here.
He pointed to a massive parking lot. Kale kept his finger pointed at a navy blue truck parked in the back of the mostly empty lot. I pulled up next to the truck, about a car's length away.
Thanks.
He looked at me like he was searching for something. Karina, I told him, and he nodded.
Thanks, Karina.
My stomach flipped a little, and I told myself it was just nerves, that it didn't have anything to do with the way he said my name. I tried to calm the swarm of bees in my stomach as he climbed out of my car without another word. Chapter 18. I don't know what I expected him to drive, but this beast of a truck wasn't it. Despite his size, I figured he'd drive something small and sleek, not this old blue thing with rust circling the wheel well. That's the problem with pretending. People's real lives are never like you imagine. He had typical Georgia plates, with peaches and the cheesy slogan, and Clayton County printed across the bottom. I had no idea where that was. I wondered if he was pissed that he joined the army and somehow ended up in his home state. He was Aility's friend, so it was only right that I made sure he got into his truck okay. I didn't want him to have to trek 3 miles back to my house if he couldn't get it to start. I knew all about cars not starting. I watched as he stuck his hand under the metal sheet just above his front tire and felt along the surface. He repeated this with all 4 tires before he pulled his phone from his pocket. His expression changed from concerned to upset. He wiped one hand over his face. The other still held his phone. I couldn't make out what he was saying, but I avoided the temptation to roll down my window to hear. There was just something about him that I needed to figure out. The more I watched him, standing there in the dark, pacing around with his iPhone going back and forth from his pocket to his cheek, the more I needed to know who he was. I was just about to Google Clayton County, Georgia, when he opened the car door and leaned down.
You can go, he told me.
Almost rude. If he wasn't locked out of his car, I would have been snarky back, but I couldn't find it in me. I looked at his truck and back to him. Are you sure? Can you not get in? He sighed heavily and shook his head.
My keys are supposed to be here. I'll find my way back. It's cool.
I'm so late to this thing I have to do.
The dinner,
he told me. So he was paying attention. Yeah, the dinner. I can't take you back before, but maybe I can call my dad and just cancel. It's not like... Kale interrupted me.
It's cool. For real.
I couldn't just leave him there. I told him so.
Why?
I opened my door and got out of the car. I don't know, I replied honestly. It's a long walk back. Do you have another set of keys somewhere? Or a friend who can come help you?
All my friends are in Afghanistan, he said.
My chest burned. Sorry, I said, leaning my back against my car.
For what?
We kept eye contact until he blinked. I quickly looked away. I don't know. The war? It sounded so stupid coming from my mouth. An army brat apologizing to a soldier for a war that started before either of them were born. Most people wouldn't have asked me why just now. Kale's tongue grazed his bottom lip. He tucked it between his teeth. The parking lot lights above us clacked on, buzzing, breaking our silence.
I'm not most people.
I can tell. The light shone through the windows of the barracks across the street, but it didn't seem like he lived there. That meant he was either married or higher ranking than his age would suggest. Soldiers below a certain rank could only live off post if they were married. But I couldn't imagine that a married man would be sleeping on my chair right after a deployment. Besides, he wasn't wearing a ring. I was checking out his ACU jacket for his rank patch when I saw his eyes on me. Are you coming with me, Sergeant, or are you going to make me stand in this parking lot until you call locksmith for your car? I looked at the patch on his chest, his last name stitched in capital letters. Martin. He was so young to be a sergeant. Come on. I put my hands up, begging. You don't know me, but this is what will happen if I leave you here knowing you will walk back to my house. 2 seconds after I drive away, I'll feel guilty, and I'll obsess over it the entire way to my dad's. The entire dinner, I explained. I'm talking apology texts to Ailady, who'll be stressed because she worries about everyone, and then I'll feel even more guilty about stressing out a pregnant woman. So I'll have to drive around trying to find you if you haven't made it back yet. It's messy, Kale, and honestly easier if you just...
Okay, okay.
He held up his hands in mock defeat. I nodded, smiling in my victory. And you know what? He almost smiled back. Chapter 19. No matter where we were stationed, my dad always chose to live in post housing, from Texas to South Carolina down to Georgia. I didn't mind it so much when I was young, because all of my friends lived by me. But as we moved, then moved again, and again, it got old fast. I started to hate the groomed cul-de-sacs and the lines of cars at each gate. My dad loved being so close to the PX, the grocery store without tax, and at the company where he worked every day. He felt safe, but as Austin and I grew up, we started to feel trapped. I remember my mom pacing around the houses, each one of them, during the summer days. There were these hours of madness for her, where the curtains were always closed and the couch turned into her bed. At first, the shift was subtle, only lasting while Dad was at work. She had two personas and could switch gears within seconds. But sometime over the summer before eighth grade, the mania took over. She woke up later, took fewer showers, stopped dancing, and even stopped pacing. Dinner was late, then hardly at all, and our parents' voices at night got louder and louder.
Karina?
Kale's voice drew me out of my memories. He was eyeing the green light above us. I pressed the gas. Sorry, I faltered, clearing my throat. My chest was aching as I drove my thoughts into reality. Okay, so we're going to my dad's house, and he's kind of... I exhaled, trying to pinpoint such a complicated man with one word. He's sort of...
Racist?
Kale asked. What? No. I felt a little defensive over his question, until I turned toward him and saw the look on his face. It said that he genuinely figured that's what I was going to say. I didn't know what to think about that. He's not racist, I told Kale as we drove. I couldn't think of anything he'd ever said or done to make me believe he was. He's just kind of an asshole. Kale nodded and leaned back in his seat. It's usually like a 2-hour thing. Too much food for 3 people, too much talking. I turned onto the main road, really the only one I could navigate on the entirety of Fort Benning. We were less than 5 minutes from my dad's house. We were 26 minutes late. It would be fine. I was an adult and something came up. They would get over it. I repeated that to myself again and began to concoct my excuse that didn't necessarily involve a stranger staying at my house. My phone started vibrating in the cup holder between us, and I reached for it the moment I saw that it was Austin calling. I grabbed the phone. I couldn't even remember the last time he actually returned my calls. I'm going to get this, I didn't finish explaining to Kale. Hello? I spoke into the phone, but only got silence. I lifted it from my cheek. Damn it! I'd missed the call. I tried to call him back, but he didn't pick up. If you see that light up, tell me. The sound only works sometimes. I looked down at my phone and Kale agreed with a nod. I turned onto my dad's street and tried to spend the last 2 minutes of the drive conjuring up an achievement, or something I could stretch to sound like one. I would need something to talk about after the scolding for my extreme tardiness. My dad always asked the same questions. To me, to his darling wife. The difference was it only took her planning a flower bed or going to someone else's kid's birthday party to get praise, when I could save a small village and he would be like, "That's great care, but it was a small village. Austin once saved a slightly larger village and Estelle created 2 villages." It wasn't healthy to compare myself to his wife, or to my brother. I was self-aware enough to know that, but the way I felt she was positioned against me still bugged the hell out of me. And then there was the fact that Austin was always my dad's favorite, and I was my mom's. This worked out better for my brother than it did for me. "We're almost there. My dad's been in the army a long time," I told him. Kale was a soldier. He wouldn't need more of an explanation. He nodded beside me and looked out the passenger window. "How long have you been in?" I asked. I heard him swallow before he spoke.
"Little over 2 years."
I almost asked him if he liked it, but we were pulling up in front of my dad's house. "We're here," I warned him. "It's like a whole fiasco. 3 courses, lots of small talk and coffee after. 2 hours minimum."
2 hours?
He blinked. I know. You can wait in the car if you want. Kale opened the passenger door and leaned down to talk to me while I was still in my seat. I checked my hair in the mirror. It was almost dry. The air was thick with humidity and it showed. I grabbed my phone. Austin hadn't called me back. "Just saying, however awful you think it's going to be, it will be worse than that." "Hmm," I thought I heard him say. I looked up as the passenger door shut. The reality of just how bad an idea it was to bring a stranger to Tuesday dinner was sinking in. Chapter 20. I was fidgety, wiping my hands on my legs. I always did that when I was nervous. "I'll do the talking," I said to Kale as we approached the door. "Let me explain why we're late, why I'm late." Then it dawned on me who I was talking to. Soldier wouldn't have a problem being quiet. We walked into the kitchen, which was filled with the aroma of honey and cinnamon, and what might have been ham. It smelled like a holiday. "Sorry I'm late," I said. "I had to stay behind a little at work, and then I was helping Ailady's friend." I turned behind me to introduce Kale. My dad was seated at the head of the table when we came in. No reading the paper, no listening to the radio, just waiting. I looked at him sitting there with his craggy face and his sparse white hair. It was really thinning now. So was his papery skin. Everyone on my dad's side turned to snow early. It looked beautiful on the women, at least it did in photographs, but I always hoped I would take after my mom. I guess we'd see. My dad moved his eyes off me and looked at Kale, who took a step back. Instinct or nervousness, who knew? Despite being just a tad over 5 feet tall, my dad was intimidating. He He could be soft when he wanted to, and when he didn't want to, he could cut like a knife.
Martin, nice to...
My dad shook Kale's hand. I was waiting for the fallout about being late when Estelle walked into the kitchen, carrying a bowl with a big wooden spoon sticking out of it.
Hey!
She greeted me like she usually did. Excited. Fake. Estelle always wore slightly different versions of the same outfit. Jeans with a little flare at the bottom, and a button-down shirt with a pattern. Always. Today's top was striped blue and red. Like all of the others, this one had darts at the waist and bust to, as she put it, create a streamlined silhouette. I couldn't be less interested in the fit of Estelle's clothes, or anything about her for that matter. But she told me one day how she liked to buy these fitted shirts because of the way they flattered her shape. She twisted her torso like a model when she said it, as if she was having fun bonding with her then-boyfriend's daughter. It had been excruciating. It was weird that Estelle never changed her style. I loved consistency, but not from her. I didn't want anything from her.
Oh, well, hey! Hi, I'm Estelle!
She wasn't doing the best job at hiding her surprise over the extra body in the room. Kale waited for her to put the dish down before extending his hand. So, Kale is Ailidi's husband's friend. He just got back from deployment yesterday. I avoided looking at my dad. He's going to eat with us, okay? He's locked out of his car. Estelle motioned for Kale to sit next to my dad in his king chair, but I sat there first so Kale could sit beside me. No need for him to occupy the hot seat.
I'm assuming you've heard from your brother?
My dad asked. I pulled out my phone. I missed a call from him.
He's on his way.
What? My dad took a long, slow drink of water.
He was arrested last night.
I stood up from my chair.
What? For what?
My dad's eyes were a carbon copy of my brother's. He was like him. I was like her. We had heard it all our lives. That didn't mean it was true. Example, this arrest.
I don't know exactly. The precinct won't tell me. If it had been on government property, I could easily have found out.
He huffed. My dad was in knots, frustrated and disappointed. I could see it all roll off him, and I knew he was feeling as if he had failed as a parent. Couldn't disagree with him there. And how is he getting here? I asked.
Driving. He should be here in a couple hours.
Kale sat there staring at the table, strumming his fingers, trying to be discreet.
Where is he going to stay?
Here,
he answered with certainty. I sighed. Does he know that? I picked up my phone and dialed my brother, but it went straight to voicemail. I didn't bother leaving a message. My dad furrowed his thick eyebrows.
Doesn't matter. He's getting himself in real trouble. This isn't child's play anymore, Karina. You two are adults now.
Us two?
I scoffed. I'm not the one who was arrested, and Austin's not even here to defend himself, so that's hardly fair either. Estelle clucked around my dad as we fought. She did this every time. She was literally making my dad's plate as we discussed his only son's failing future. He and I raised our voices, but she was her normal, perky self. Kale shifted uncomfortably in his seat.
Would you like some ham?
Estelle asked Kale. She was exactly what my dad needed. Someone who could ignore the chaos and play the role of the obliging wife in the second half of his life. My mom was a hurricane, and Estelle wasn't even a drizzle.
The glaze is a family recipe. Here, take some.
She held up a little plantation-style gravy boat full of dark, syrupy liquid. When she bought the thing off eBay, she literally told me it was from a real plantation, like that wasn't a gross thing to say and own. Kale thanked her for helping him make his plate. I told my dad that I knew he shouldn't have sent my brother away, that this was his fault. He told me the fault was all mine. I'm not hungry, I told Estelle when she passed me the ham. My stomach gurgled, proving me a liar.
Don't be a child,
my dad told me. He smiled at me, a sorry attempt to soften his words. You just said I was an adult. Now you say I'm being a child? Which is it? I hated bickering like this, but my father brought out the worst in me, especially when the subject was my brother.
I'm just confused why you're acting like it's not a big deal, I said. Because it is. It's a very big deal.
I know, Karina, but this isn't the first time.
It's only the second, I snapped. It's not like he's a career criminal.
Let's not worry about him until he's here, okay? There's nothing either of us can do from here. He's a 20-year-old man.
My dad's response to my brother's second arrest was rational, almost to the extreme. I wished I could just push my emotions away like that. It took me a while to shift gears. My dad could bounce back and forth between extreme emotions, just like my mom. She was worse at it, or better. I guess it all depended on how you looked at it. My stomach rumbled again, and I gave in and started making myself a plate. Kale had a fork full of mashed potatoes moving up to his mouth. I figured he could sense we were calming down and getting into our regular motion. We would be back bickering soon enough. I put my phone on the table, screen up, just in case Austin texted or something. And then I tried hard not to think of him, driving all the way here by himself, scared about being arrested, scared about facing our dad.
So, Kale, are you home for good?
Estelle was the stage director, moving the conversation away from our family dramatics. This time, I was almost grateful.
I think so. Not quite sure yet, ma'am.
His manners were impeccable. I wanted to know more about this man. I bet his mother was kind. I couldn't remember the last time I heard someone my age call someone ma'am. I watched him as he politely answered every question she threw at him. What battalion was he assigned to? Where in Afghanistan was his camp? His answers were short but sincere, and his lips wrapped around every word he said. I wished he enjoyed talking more than he seemed to. By the time we were eating dessert, I'd forgotten that we were even late. Austin's arrest took the attention off of me. Not the first time that had worked in my favor. Chapter 21.
Well, that was nice, Estelle said.
She stood awkwardly, waiting for me to hug her. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. Let me know when Austin gets here. I'd stay and wait, but I have to work in the morning. My dad nodded. Kale stood in the doorway, half in, half out. My dad hugged me.
What are your plans for the weekend? We're going up to Atlanta if you want to.
I'm working. I loved Atlanta, but no way was I going with them. And wouldn't their plans change with Austin coming to town?
It was so nice to meet you, Kale. Drive safe.
Estelle smiled. I wondered if she thought he was my boyfriend. I would never introduce him in that way, but she was awfully smiley and more than a little nosy the way she looked at us when I nudged him to open the door. I didn't give anyone else a chance to speak before I stepped onto the porch and practically ran down the driveway. God, I hate those dinners. Even after all we had endured, Kale didn't have a word to say. Do you have a family? I assumed he wouldn't answer, but anything was better than silence.
Do I have a family?
He repeated. I mean, obviously you have a family. Otherwise you literally wouldn't exist. But are they like that? I nodded toward the house.
Nope,
he said, staring out the windshield of my car.
Not at all.
In a good way or a bad way? I asked.
Both,
he shrugged, buckling his seatbelt. I think it just bothers me this much, because Estelle is so different from my mom. She was really fun when I was young. My mom, not Estelle, I clarified, though he didn't ask. She used to laugh and listen to music. She would dance around the living room listening to Van Morrison, waving her arms around like a bird or a butterfly. It feels like a lifetime ago. I was thinking back to that other version of my mom, the one who had long, flowing hair that moved in the wind. She was just as carefree now, but not even close to the same way. She used to lift her hands up and push them through her hair, letting it fall around her. It always tickled my face, and I would laugh, and she would shake her hair and dance around me. The thrum of my engine cutting through the thick Georgia air was all I could hear. I'd never noticed the sounds before. I'd never had time to. And my birthday parties. She used to go all out for them. It was this huge thing, more like a birthday week. We didn't have a ton of money or anything, but she was creative. One year she decorated the whole house in those lights from Spencer's.
Do you remember that store?
He nodded.
They had these disco lights, and my mom put them all around our living room and kitchen. All of our friends came over. I mean, I only had like 3 friends. Most of the kids came for Austin. We always had a packed house. I had this boyfriend. I think his name was Josh, and he brought me cornbread. That was my birthday gift. I didn't know why I was going into such detail, but I was so lost in my own memories that I just kept going. I don't know why he brought me cornbread. Maybe his mom just had it lying around? I don't know. But I remember getting this karaoke machine and thinking it was the coolest present ever. And my mom went into her room and locked the door so we could feel older than we were and not be chaperoned the entire time. Of course, we ended up playing one of those stupid party games, and I had to kiss a boy named Joseph, who actually just overdosed on heroin a few months ago. I could feel Kale looking at me. But it was the weirdest thing. I couldn't stop myself from talking. We were at a red light. The sky was pitch black, and the red lights were reflecting off his dark skin. "Wow, I'm talking a lot," I told him. He looked over at me.
"It's cool."
His voice was so soft. Who was this guy? So patient, so quiet, yet so in touch with the moment. I tried to imagine Ailidi's husband having a conversation with him. Philip was buoyant and friendly, and Kale... well, I didn't know what the hell to think of him. It had been a long time since I'd had this type of conversation with someone, if I ever had. My brother was the only person I reminisced about my parents with, but even he had stopped wanting to relive our childhood with me.
"My mom raised me and my sister up in Riverdale."
Kale's voice was sudden and sharp, drowning out the purring engine, the sound of the wind. "I love that show," I told him, and he smiled. I caught it before it vanished. I filed it away.
"It's all right."
"The show or the town?" I asked.
"Both."
He didn't smile. "How old is your sister?" I figured I'd better pounce while he was feeling uncharacteristically chatty.
"Younger than me."
"My brother, too." I wanted to ask him her exact age, but we were coming up to my little white house. By about 6 minutes. Most people laughed when I told them this. Kale didn't say anything, but again, I knew he was looking at me. The wind blew dirt over my windshield as I pulled into my driveway. Paving my driveway was rapidly moving up to my to-do list. I parked and apologized again for fighting with my dad in front of him. He nodded, muttering his version of, "It's cool." I reached between us to grab my purse from the floorboard behind my seat. "At least you won't have to go through that again. As for me, I'll be back there next Tuesday at 7 p.m. sharp." I said sharp as much as for myself as for Kale. If I was late for next week's dinner, I would never hear the end of it. The alley was so dark on moonless nights like this that it was hard to see the porch. A beam came from Kale's phone and he shined it onto the porch. "I need to get some lights out here." Kale's body kept moving next to me, and I saw him looking around the yard, down the driveway, down the alley to the side of the yard. His neck was sort of jerking. It wasn't an alarming movement, just a quiet survey of his surroundings. I tried to imagine him in Afghanistan, a heavy gun strapped to his body, and the weight of the free world on his shoulders.
"My sister is 15, by the way," he said,
as he walked past me into the house. Chapter 22. Ailidi was asleep on the couch, her small body sprawled out at awkward angles. I set my purse down on the floor, kicked my shoes off, and covered her with her favorite blanket. Her grandmother had made it for her when she was a kid. It was really worn now, almost threadbare, but she slept with it every day. Her grandma had passed a few years back. Ailidi cried every time she talked about it. I wondered if she missed her family. She was so far from them and pregnant, with a husband away at war. She didn't talk about her parents much, but I got the impression they weren't very keen on her running away to the U.S. with a young soldier she'd met on the internet. I couldn't say I blamed them. Ailidi moved a little when I turned off the TV. "Did you want to watch that?" I asked Kale. I forgot that he would be sleeping out here, and considered waking Ailidi up to come to my bed.
No, it's cool.
Oh, this man of many words. I continued. Well, I'm going to put this pie in the fridge and go to bed. I have to work in the morning. And if you need anything from the store, write it on my list stuck to the fridge, I offered. Kale nodded and sat down in my red chair. Was he going to sleep there? Do you need a blanket? I asked. He shrugged and said,
If you have one.
Almost under his breath. I grabbed an old comforter from the hallway closet and brought it to him. He thanked me and I told him goodnight again. I felt wide awake when I got to my bed. Through the night, I thought about how Kale had been with my dad and Estelle. How he somehow managed to make the dinner more bearable. I thought about the kind and unexpected way he filled up my gas tank on the way to my dad's, and then, of course, because I overthink everything, I thought about how I should pay him back for the gas, even if he didn't want me to. I felt so restless. I turned over, grabbed a pillow, and put it between my legs, hugging it close. I thought about how it would be really nice to have a warm body in bed next to me. At least then I'd have someone to talk to when I couldn't sleep. Unless it was Kale. I smiled at the thought, thinking how if it was him in my bed. I caught myself before I went any further. What the hell was wrong with me that I was picturing Kale in my bed? I needed physical contact. That had to be the reason that no matter how much I tried to think about anything else, anyone else, I couldn't help but imagine him lying next to me, staring up at the ceiling the way he'd stared out the windshield the whole ride home. It had been almost a year since I had human contact that wasn't work-related, outside of my family and Ailady. Not that I was used to having it in large or consecutive doses. But Kale was making me daydream about him and I. People my age usually met guys at clubs or school or through friends, but I didn't have much experience with any of the above. Brienne and I had gone back and forth a little, still making out in his car after I promised myself I would never speak to him again. The last time I let it happen was in his barracks room, when I rolled over and something jabbed my side. An earring. I'd felt like I was in a movie because, one, who loses an earring while hooking up and doesn't notice, and two, I had been playing the part of the lonely, desperate-for-attention girl who knew her guy was hooking up with other girls, but it took a hideous hoop earring to make her admit it to herself. We fought about it. He said it must have been his roommate's girlfriend's earring, and had nothing to say when I reminded him that I had seen his roommate hook up with multiple people, not one of whom was female. I grabbed my phone to scroll through social media to get Brian out of my head. I typed Kale's name in Ailady's friend list, but nothing came up. So I searched for him again. I found a profile with less than 100 friends, which seemed odd to me. I didn't talk to 99% of the people I was friends with, but I still had almost 1,000. That seemed excessive, having 1,000 people I didn't talk to have access to me. His profile picture was a group shot of Kale with 3 other soldiers. They were all dressed in ACUs and standing next to a tank. Kale was grinning in the picture, maybe even laughing. That's how bright his smile was. It was weird to see him like that, his arm around one of the guys. But apart from his profile picture, I couldn't get any information from his page at all. Everything was private. I almost requested to be his friend, but it felt stalkerish to send him a Facebook request while he was sleeping on my chair in the living room. I clicked out of his profile and started scrolling through my Facebook friends, unfriending people who I barely knew. I removed about 100 before I fell asleep. Chapter 23. I woke up fully clothed with my cell phone on my chest. It felt like the heat was on and I never turned the heat on. I checked the time. Almost 4 in the morning. I had to be up at 8 so I could run to the grocery store before work at 10. I plugged my phone into the charger and sat up. I kept my t-shirt on, but unclasped my bra and slid my jeans off. It was so hot in my room and my throat was dry. I could feel the sweat on the back of my neck when I tied up my thick, curly hair. I thought about putting pants on before I went to the kitchen for water, but it was 4 a.m., and Kale and Ailady would undoubtedly be sleeping. It was so hot I couldn't think about sliding thick pajamas over my thighs right then. So I made sure I was quiet when I walked down the hallway and into the kitchen. I kept the hallway light off and relied on the little nightlights plugged into my kitchen outlets to see. I grabbed the jug of water out of my fridge and chugged it until I couldn't anymore. I closed the fridge and almost screamed when I saw Kale sitting at the kitchen table.
Shit! You scared me.
I wiped my mouth with the back of my hand. Then I felt bad because I knew I had made him feel bad.
Sorry if I woke you. It's so hot in here, I told him.
I was up.
I took a step closer to him, and it took his eyes raking down my body, down my bare thighs, to remember that I was only in my panties. I tried to use my hands to cover my ass, but there was no use. I should have just thrown on pants. Or panties that half my ass didn't hang out of.
Why are you up? Were you just sitting here in the dark?
Sorry, I don't have any clothes on. I thought you would be asleep. Kale's head tilted just a bit, like he was confused by what I was saying, and he looked down at my legs. I immediately felt a wave of insecurity, thinking about the dips of cellulite peppered across my thighs. He looked back up at my face.
Can I have some of that water?
He asked me. I flushed, not only because I was still half naked, but because he had obviously watched me chug water out of a gallon jug. I nodded and opened the fridge. It's just tap water. I buy one of these. I held up the jug labeled spring water. Every once in a while and just refill it with tap water, so it's not actually spring water. Why was I rambling?
I've been in Afghanistan for months. I think I can handle some Georgia tap water.
His sarcasm surprised me. I smiled at him and he smiled back. Another surprise. He took the jug from my hand and lifted it to his mouth without touching his lips. So why are you up? Getting used to the time difference? I asked. He handed back the jug and I took another swig. I was still hot, but the kitchen was much cooler than my bedroom. The cold tile felt good under my feet.
I don't sleep much.
Kale finally answered. Ever?
Never.
I sat across from him at the little table. Because of where you were? My stomach started to ache from my navel to my throat, thinking about him. This quiet young man, being woken up in a war zone from shells or rockets or whatever terror he went through. He nodded.
It's weird being back here.
Between his honesty and the vulnerability shadowing his face, I thought I could be dreaming. Do you have to go back? I asked, hoping he would say no. In the back of my head, an alarm was blaring, screeching to warn me, or maybe Kale, of how I was starting to feel toward him. I had known him less than 24 hours, yet I wanted to protect him, to keep him from going back there.
I don't know,
he responded, and we both fell silent. I hope you don't. The words were out before I could care how they sounded. Part of me felt like I was betraying my childhood, my family lineage of soldiers and airmen, but I guess I wasn't as patriotic as I was expected to be. Not if this is what it meant. When Kale laid his head down on his crossed arms and said,
"Me too."
My whole body heaved. This military life was so unfair sometimes. I wanted to ask Kale if he thought about what he signed up for. Or if, like most of the young soldiers I knew, he had been persuaded to join by the poverty around him and the promise of a steady paycheck and health insurance. I'm sorry, I started to say, but his eyes were closed. I stared at him in the dark for a few seconds before a small snore fell from his full lips. Chapter 24. Do you always wear your uniform? I asked him in the cereal aisle. The cart we had chosen had a creaky wheel that liked to get stuck on turns. I'd handed Kale my grocery list in the parking lot, assigning him to hold on to it. He didn't say anything, so I took it as a yes.
No,
he said, surprising me. I looked at him, pressing him to say more. Seems like it. I attempted to soften my words by smiling at him, but he didn't look down at me.
I don't have any of my clothes.
Shit. Oh, sorry, I didn't think about that. Where are they? Do you need a ride to get them? He grabbed a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. At least he had good taste in cereal. He was keeping his items in the basket in the front of the cart where kids usually sat while parents tried to keep them entertained and cooperative.
I don't know where they are.
He looked confused. I was getting better at reading him every day. Granted, it had only been 2 days, but still. I was cracking him open, slowly but surely. His face was actually pretty expressive.
Was going to go to the mall later. Or Kohl's, wherever.
We passed an older man who kept his eyes on Kale and me, just a beat too long. I noticed his lingering stare, shifting back and forth between us, and the hairs on my neck prickled. The man disappeared around the corner. When I went to mention it to Kale, I started wondering if I was just paranoid and decided not to give the grumpy old man any more attention than I already had. I work until 4, but I could run you to get clothes after, I offered. The commissary was crowded as always. The low prices on groceries and the zero tax were barely worth bracing the crowd for. I would rather work an extra shift than wait behind shopping carts stuffed to their brims. Kale pointed down the next aisle, the beginning of the freezer section.
You know there's Uber and cabs and stuff, right?
I glared at him. I was trying to be nice.
I know. I'm just fucking with you.
His voice was light, a different tone than I had ever heard come from his lips. It made my skin tingle. I looked away. Ha ha, I teased back. My throat was aching. I would always remember that. The way he made parts of me ache that I had never felt before. I would always be thankful for that. So should I take you or not? Can you grab those little pizzas? The red box, I pointed behind him.
If you want. I mean, I'm already staying on your couch, imposing on your family dinners, eating your granola bars.
You ate my granola bars? He laughed. If I hadn't turned around, I would have missed it. It was that quick.
I'm buying you another box.
He was definitely not into owing people things. I would normally say it's fine just to be polite, but my electric bill is high as hell this month, so go ahead. I nudged his shoulder. He tensed up beside me. It was a shift as small as a pinprick, but I felt it down my spine. Kale took a step away from me as we continued to walk. The music overhead was louder. It had to be. I felt uncomfortable, embarrassed. It was as if something had cracked open last night. I guess a 3 a.m. chat in your panties would do that. Kale was different today. More open, almost talkative.